This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
It's Thursday, and I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 10th, episode 1378, Good Morning Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. It's exciting knowing that for the rest of my life, I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
That's right. It is the Mary Kitzmiller episode that we do here the second Thursday of every month. Hi, Mary.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. 1 week from today, I'll be picking you up at the airport.
I know. I can't believe it's coming up so fast.
I know. We're so excited. Mary and I are making plans for all our coverage there at Road to the Horse. So we're going to be doing that next week, bringing all that coverage to you. It'll start next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll be doing the only free live coverage on Sunday from the stadium at the Alltech Arena, and be giving you a lot. We're going to be getting a lot of fun guests and talking about a lot of fun training stuff over the weekend. Well, Mary will be talking about the training stuff. I will be getting the fun guests because I'm obviously not qualified to do training. But that's why we have you, the expert.
Yes, I'm going to be the expert on site. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
It will be a good time, and we hope that you all join us. It's free and easy. Just go to horsesinthemorning.com, and the player will be right there. Go to Horse Radio Network, and we'll also be posting a lot of stuff on Mary's Facebook page and ours, as well as Road to the Horse will be posting it also. So that's all coming up and the next week. But first, our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody in the Gulf Coast, all the way up to Southern Illinois and Mississippi and Louisiana got hit really hard. There are three deaths that have been confirmed from all the flooding. 3,500 homes have been evacuated by flooding. So this has been just a rain event. Have you been getting it where you are?
We've been getting the heavy rain for sure. You know, we're not in, I've had an ongoing flood warning on my phone weather app since last March. There's a river nearby that jumps its banks, but we're okay. It's just that once again, you know, I can't walk outside without stepping into 2 inches of water. So my horses are not happy, but we're safe. So that's good.
Yep. Good. Good. I know you're in Eastern Texas, right?
I am. Yeah. And it's kind of turned into this rainforest.
Yeah, you guys were dry for years. I mean, no rain at all for
years. When I first moved here 6 years ago, that spring was very wet, just like this one. And then, you know, I had this beautiful lush pastures. I didn't have to do anything to. And then we had that drought for a couple years there that was just, oh my gosh, it was terrible. And we were taking so much hay from Colorado that Colorado had a hay shortage. And yeah, so if I had to choose between the two, I'm very happy for rain. My pasture is going to be really nice this year.
Yep, that's for sure. We would too. But those people that are now underwater and their horses or their houses have been flooded are not saying that, I'm sure. But
no,
we're thinking about, we have a lot of listeners in that area, so we're thinking about you guys. On a lighter note, I don't know if you saw this has been going around Facebook, and I know you're a huge movie fan, aren't you?
Just a little bit.
Yeah. She loves, anybody doesn't know about Mary, Mary loves movies. I think she watches 30 movies a week. And I give you credit because you'll watch the crappy ones and the good ones. I mean, you pretty much give everything a chance.
Well, and it's not even that I watch the movie. I watch the movie and then you look at the IMDb page and I look at who wrote the score and what director directed other films. And then, you know, I read, I just watched Spotlight, twice now. It was the best picture winner at the Oscars this year, and it was a really good film. And, you know, I couldn't just watch the movie. I had to, like, listen to all the interviews with the real people who were in it and find out what the real story was. And so I'm a walking internet movie database. If you ask me about a movie, I could probably tell you who the director's second cousin is.
You know, Rotten Tomatoes does a podcast. You should be on that one. You should be on the Rotten Tomatoes podcast.
I need to find an angle to where we can have a...
Have you listened to that one anyway?
I have not.
You should. You would love the Rotten Tomatoes podcast because they go over every movie coming out every week and kind of give their opinions. And then they talk about the, you know, what the Rotten Tomatoes critics have said. And then they get in depth on some of the movies with interviews and stuff too. Rotten Tomatoes has a good podcast. You would definitely like that.
Well, I do. I'm on their website all the time, them and Metacritic. And I know about a movie 9 months before it comes out.
Where did this fascination with movies come from?
You know, I had no idea that I was obsessed until I realized that other people were not quite as obsessed. And I didn't even know. It's weird because I have all this knowledge of movies, but it's not even like I'm, you know, I don't even remember really researching it as much as I have until someone will ask me, oh, what year did that come out? Oh, it was like in 1993. It was Christmas and da 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 da. I'm like, oh, I guess I know a lot about movies.
Well, there you go. There's Mary's secret obsession that you didn't know about before. But Morgan Freeman, this has been going around Facebook. It's so funny. They cut bits and pieces of Morgan Freeman's movies out, and they made it sound like he was your GPS. So I have the audio here. This was what it would sound like if Morgan Freeman was your GPS voice.
Jesus. In 500 feet, turn left into Del Taco. Busy eating, get busy dying. In 500 feet, turn right. What is right? What is wrong? Only you can decide. Oh, you missed it. Notice the beautiful palm trees on the corner, planted there in 1947. Uh-oh, we're lost. On your right, you'll see barbed wire. Better lock those doors, Whitey. You're in my hood now. Well, let's play a game called Spot the Prius. Or as I call them, douche buggies. Slowly pull your car into this garage. We'll hide out here till the police are gone.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
I need to download that.
Morgan Freeman. I really would like him as my GPS, wouldn't you? I'd pay money for that.
Oh, yeah.
To have that voice telling you?
Oh. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's good. I need to download that.
Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
On today's Training with Mary Kitzmiller episode, we've got a minor thoroughbred invasion going on to start things off as we chat with 2016 retired racehorse training project MIC competitor Amy Nelson about how she takes a slightly different approach with the pre-race training of thoroughbreds so that they have a better shot at a fruitful post-racing career. And then Warwick Schiller with the best name ever takes on a topic that always gets horse owners wound up, how to help anxious horses. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Speaking of anxious horses, now last month we announced on the show that you took a thoroughbred into training for the thoroughbred makeover at the end of the year, and you were going to be competing it there in Kentucky. And by the way, I think we've decided that we have to go. We Jamie has to come in.
Good.
We have to go because you need a cheering team. You need a cheering squad.
Yes, I do. Desperately.
Yes, we'll get some of the listeners to come and we'll all cheer you on.
Good.
As long as cheering won't freak out your thoroughbred. If it does, then we'll quietly do the golf clap. Okay?
Yes. So,
yeah.
Yes.
All right, we'll give you the golf clap.
Or some Buddhist chanting, you
yes.
know.
We'll give you the hum.
Yes.
So now tell us about your thoroughbred. How's it been going? Well, we talked to you last. I think you just gotten it, or you hadn't even gotten it yet. It was right around that time.
I think I'd either just brought him home. I think he'd been home for a couple hours.
Yeah, exactly. It was a couple hours. I think you're right. So now you've had a chance to start working with him and training him. And you've done, to remind people, you've done Mustang Makeover. You've done Road to the Horse twice. And, you know, you're no stranger to training competitions, but how does the thoroughbred differ so far from what you're used to?
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting. And I have made this really odd career on training competitions, and it's been wonderful. But so this guy, I'm taking a very slow, methodical approach. I've decided to focus almost entirely on a positive reinforcement or clicker training regimen for him. So what I'm working on now is establishing calmness and emotional control. And I want to, you know, just start doing exercises with him that work on patience and, you know, making sure he's comfortable and relaxed. And then from there, we'll get into the nitty gritty stuff. And I think I'll be really successful in that way. But, the first thing I noticed is he is insanely smart. And of course, this is my first off the track thoroughbred. So I'm on Facebook like, oh my gosh, this horse is so smart. You wouldn't believe it. And I've had people who do have experience with thoroughbred get on there. They're like, yeah, that's just how they are. You didn't know that? I'm like, no, I did not. In fact,
all the quarter horse people are saying, you're a traitor.
Yeah. So he's really smart. A lot of the clicker thing training tasks that I would teach him, I've never had a horse get in the first session, and he did. He would just kind of do it and then look at me and he's like, okay, what's next? And with that, horses that I actually have a Mustang that reminds me of him. They look alike, they have the same talents, the same vices. It's kind of scary. And from my experience with that Mustang, I know that these horses that are just really brilliant and, you know, they've got this kind of sparkle in their eyes and they're very observant and they can be really tricky because it's hard to keep them entertained. You know, the Mustang, for instance, and I do a lot of clicker training with him. So if I haven't reinforced him with a click in like, oh, say 10 seconds, he's going to figure out stuff to do. He'll look at me, he's like, I'm bored. And he'll start trying to lay down because that's one of his tricks. And, you know, he'll swallow half the lead rope down his throat and so how do you keep a horse like that engaged? You don't want to punish them. You know, you don't want to snuff out the thing that makes them so smart and inquisitive. You know, I want that to work with me, not against me. So that's been the biggest challenge with him is, trying to work on patience. And it's been a lot of fun. He's actually doing really, really well. I'm excited about him.
Now, you said in one of your blog or one of your Facebook posts that he came with he was very nippy and very mouthy. And you're talking about clicker training now with a horse that's very nippy. You know, that's counterintuitive, right? So what have you found with that?
Yeah, you know, overall, this guy's foundation. He's pretty young. He's just three, only had five starts on the track. And his trainer put a really nice training foundation on him. And he showed me what he did. And the guy's actually really into RFDTV and hooked on all these clinicians that are out there. And he's done some good work. However, the horse, even when I went to look at him, if you weren't paying attention, the horse would try to nip at you. Nothing serious. You know, he's not going to take skin yet. But you know, it was something that I was definitely really vigilant about, and I can tell he's been reprimanded for it a lot because obviously you can't just lead this horse around and let him take it, you know, let him bite you. So I can tell that people sort of swatted at him and tried to get him off of him, and I myself have been down that road with punishing a horse for biting. It seems the right thing to do because it's dangerous. Even if they're playfully doing it, it can be very dangerous. So punishing seems like that's the thing to do. But what I learned, especially with horses like this guy, the really smart and inquisitive ones and the ones who get bored really easy, your timing has to be ninja-like to punish these guys in a way that will make the behavior stop completely. And I had another experience with this when I was working for a reining trainer. Almost 10 years ago now. And we had this stud horse in training who was also really bad about, if you weren't paying attention, he was going to try to bite your arm. And then when you turned back to, you know, do something, he would already be throwing his head away from you so you couldn't get him. So my trainer said, every time he does that, you back him up really hard and, you know, really hustle him and blah, 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 blah. So I did. Every time the horse would nip at me, and he also liked to scream and call out to other horses. He was really bad about that. So anytime any of that steady behavior came out, I would back him up 100 feet. And surprise, surprise, none of that went away on this horse. And I realized something. We were at this huge show in Katy, Texas, the NRBC, and I had to lead this horse every day down this really long road to get him to the arena. And of course, there were a bunch of mares walking by. It's spring, and this thing would just scream and scream and scream. And every time he did it, I'd run him back down that, you know, I'd back him up really hard down that road. And then one day I was walking him along, and he saw this horse go by, and he looked up to scream. And before I could even do anything, he is yanking my arm out of the socket, running backwards 100 feet. And so what I realized was I had only successfully taught that horse to scream and then run backwards. So that's kind of inconvenient. you know, I'm not against punishment or correction, but the timing has to be really good. You have to be so consistent. And then a lot of times, behavior like that does not always come from this place of dominance, and I'm trying to establish my pecking order over you. And a lot of times the things that create those behaviors are nervousness and fear and anxiety and frustration and confusion. So punishing a horse that's in that state of mind only makes him feel more so, more anxious, more afraid. And so the behavior is not going to go away. And even if by some miracle you are able to snuff it out, all you're really doing is hiding it. You're just putting a Band-Aid over it. And
so what are you doing?
Well, long story short, with the clicker training, what I'm doing with the horse, and this kind of goes right into my training tip today, I'm giving him something to do other than nipping. So it's not good enough just to simply say, I don't want you to nip. That's not specific enough. I'm going to give him a job, even when it doesn't seem like we're working on anything. If we're standing in the warm-up pen waiting to show, or I'm grooming you, or I'm talking to my friend, and I've got you, you know, I've got you beside me, I'm going to give you a job to do that you will get reinforced for, so you're going to enjoy doing it, that will take the place of your desire to nip. So with the clicker training, that's actually one of the very first exercises I do. A few people call it a few different things. I call it mind your manners. Alexandra Curlin has a great name for it. She calls it grown-ups are talking. So, you know, when grown-ups are talking, don't bother me. I love that.
I remember my grandmother saying that.
Yeah. And we actually I think we had our listener question about this during the last show. She was asking, how do you work on food mugginess? And this is one of those things where I teach him, okay, when I stand beside you and I'm in a neutral position, so I'm not asking you to do anything, I'm just kind of standing there, I'm going to give you a job to do, and I'm going to reinforce you a lot for it. So I'm going to mark your good behavior, and the behavior I'm looking for is don't bite, obviously, but keep, you know, I'm going to give you things to do. I'd like you to stand quietly. I'd like you to keep your head neck nice and straight. And you could get really specific with it, but I get pretty simple. You know, just stand next to me and keep your head straight. And when I see you doing that, even if it's for a second, I'm going to mark that with my marker signal, which is a click, and then I'm going to reward you with something you love. Now, initially, the horse will begin to do this good behavior just because there's food involved. But I'm taking away consequence and correction, and I'm only focusing on what I can reward. So when I first started this with my horse, my thoroughbred, I actually had to put him behind a barrier to do this safely, because I'm taking away consequence and correction. So if I feel he's getting too close, I simply walk away. And then, you know, he knows that we only play the game when he's being a good boy. So, you have to set up a safe environment to start this out. And over time, he only associates standing quietly with reward, constant reinforcement. And pretty soon in his mind, he will actually hunt that behavior over the nipping and playfulness and pawing at the ground or what have you. I call it rewiring their brain because it really is like that. And Guthrie all the time, that's his biggest trick that people love is not the fact that he can bow and lay down and fetch something and bring it to me. It's his pretty face. So when I stand next to him, he collects his head and neck. So he actually flexes at the pole. And because I reinforced it so much in the beginning, it's become default behavior. Anytime I stand next to him, he just goes right into his pretty face. And people love that more than any other thing I've taught him. So, pretty soon they'll do the behavior because it feels good rather than they're doing it because they're hoping to get a reward.
Mary, you have successfully taught your horse to smile for the camera.
I have. He does.
Dang, you need to patent that.
Yes. Yes.
So now what will be your next step as we go into the next month with this? You're working with him slowly, the new thoroughbred. And you're working with him slowly, and I assume, you know, he already has had saddles on, and he's probably already been ridden, as most thoroughbreds are. But what'll be your next step then as you gradually work, you know, through the training process, through the bottom of the pyramid, basically, at this point?
Well, the things that I've worked on him so far was this kind of standing next to him and getting this nice behavior established, planting that seed. I've worked on teaching him to back up off of the feel of the halter because that's going to be really helpful when we work out in the open for safety. And then I've also started working on leading, which seems simple. The horse obviously leads, but does he lead without trying to take a swipe at you every step? Not necessarily. So those exercises are all focused on what I was talking about earlier, the relaxation, emotional control. They're things I'm going to reward. And then once I feel like I've got, he doesn't have to be perfect, but once I feel like I've kind of got this baseline established of, okay, you understand how to act around me and that you're going to get rewarded more for being relaxed and quiet than you will for being anxious and trying to move around a lot. I'll go into a lot of groundwork with him. And I'll do some of the typical things that you see with groundwork, but I'm really hoping to also dive into more of an in-hand program that's similar to what they do with the classical dressage horses. So on the ground, I'm going to teach him all the things I'll want him to do under saddle. I'm going to teach him to move his shoulders, move his hips. I'll teach him to bring his haunches in and bring his shoulders in. We'll do some lateral, like leg yields, even two tracking, all from the ground. I'll teach him how to be soft. I'll start putting the hackamore on him here in a week or so. So he I'm going to start in the hackamore anyway. Teach him how to work with that. He's never had a saddle on that wasn't a racing saddle. So he's only had an elastic girth on. So that's going to be a process, getting him ready for my big heavy Western saddle with two cinches. So I need to make sure he's okay with that. And then my goal is to actually be on him by June. I'm hoping to be on earlier, but it's always nice if I know that I'm working kind of more methodically and a little bit slower. It's always nice to give myself a date that, you know, okay, this is the day I'd like to be on him. So if I feel like we're going too slow, I can just look ahead and say, okay, no, I don't have to be on him till this date. And then by June, I think we'll still have 4 months. But even though maybe I hadn't been on him before that, he's still going to know everything that I'll need him to know under saddle beforehand.
Got it. Very good. Well, now you also have, good luck with him. It's going to be so interesting to live through this process with you on the show here. So that's going to be, I think that's going to be fun. And we'll definitely take a segment out of every show. What did we call him, by the way?
I renamed him Moonshine.
Oh, that's right. We call him Moonshine.
Yeah.
Yes, which I thought was so cool. So now let's talk a little bit about your online video series while Jennifer lines up our first guest.
This is one of the horses that's going to be featured. I've just bought a brand spanking new super special camera I'm so excited about. And one of the biggest things that's held me back from doing a lot of recording to have videos available online is getting an external mic that doesn't pick up all the wind noise. Mm-hmm. So I finally
There's nothing I just, more annoying than watching somebody doing a clinic on video and all you hear is whoosh, 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 and you can't hear anything they're saying.
Yeah. I can't stand it.
Did you get
it.
A lavalier or you got a wireless?
Yes. Yeah. Which, you know, it's so weird because I've looked for a lavalier mic that'll hook to a, you know, just a normal video camcorder for years, and I finally found one. So that's going to be nice because up till now I've done a couple of videos of moonshine already, and I had to do voiceover, which oh my gosh, that's tricky. So he's going to be. I'm going to start filming him, and then I've got of course my quarter horse Guthrie. I've got a Mustang Rooster that I'm going to film. Of course, my Z Dunk is going to be on there. And then a mare that I'm also training for cutting. And so I'm going to film these guys. It's going to kind of go in more like episodic form or like a journal. And so I'm going to film just what we're working on each week. There's going to be a lot of free content involved. So you can kind of get a feel for what the program is. And then I'll also have a pay-per-view system. And so that should be ready in the coming weeks.
By the way, that's called a vlog.
A vlog. Ooh, I like it.
It's called a vlog. And actually, Elisa Wallace is doing... and we heard that Elisa is also competing this year at the...
Yes.
So she has her own horse this year, but she's doing that. And they're very popular. So I think if you can get that figured out, you're gonna get some traction off of that. And also, I think that... Doesn't the competition itself have a blog where they post blog posts and stuff so people can follow the different horses? I think they do,
Yeah, there's a couple of Facebook groups out there. There's one closed that's just for the trainers, but there's a public one. I think you can look it up under Retired Racehorse Project Thoroughbred Makeover. If you type those in, you might run across that group. And then they take they post questions and take comments from the trainers all the time. That can be found on the Retired Racehorse Project website. And a lot of trainers have already set up their own personal blogs. So it's really interesting seeing everyone's different approach. I'm not seeing too many Western people who are posting, mostly the English folks. So I feel kind of the odd man out a little bit here, but it's really
you
cool.
You
got to
represent, Mary.
I do.
You have more bling than any of them.
I do. And, you know, last night I was seriously considering doing the dressage. I'm like, maybe I'll just go into the dressage class because we don't have to choose right away.
And what, you talked yourself right out of it, or?
Well,
it sounded like there was a butt coming.
Unless I can find the budget for the saddle and the bridle and the blanket and the breeches and the tall boots and,
we could probably get you outfitted. I'm not sure about the saddle, but we could probably get you an outfit. If we're going to put you in breeches, I would make sure one of our sponsors provided that.
I rode dressage back in the day. I did a little combined training, just a minor eventing and a few training level dressage tests.
You know the hats are different, right? Just
well
saying.
Now
they all have to wear helmets. I'm just saying.
Yes.
Yeah, they're a little different than your fancy cowboy hats.
Yeah, even the Grand Prix, I think, is going to be wearing helmets
now. They're all wearing helmets.
They used to have to do it just in the warm-up pen, but now I think they have to do it across the board.
You know, no cowboy hat in competition. I'm just saying. Just think about it.
Well, I'm doing the freestyle, too. And so if I did happen to ride English for a class, the freestyle I will get is howdy doody as humanly possible.
Can't wait. Can't wait. And by the way, I also want to mention before we get to Amy here that next Friday night, if you want to meet Mary in person, both of us, Mary and I, will be at the Clarion Hotel. We're going to be in the restaurant at the Cortland Southern Kitchen at the Clarion Hotel next Friday night at 7 p.m. So if you're coming out to Road to the Horse or you just live in the area of Lexington, Kentucky and want to come out for a meetup, we're doing a listener meetup Friday night to the 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clarion Hotel. You can just go to clarionhotellex.com and find the address and everything and just go to the restaurant part and we'll hopefully have a little corner back in the restaurant. You can come say hi, and that'll be fun. Remember, we did a meetup. We did a listener meetup in Texas when I was there, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so, that was really cool. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, so if you want to meet Mary and myself, then hop on out next Friday night. All right, Amy is ready for you.
Okay, so we have Amy Delson with us this morning, and we're going to talk a little bit more about training off-the-track thoroughbreds. How are you, Amy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Just trying to survive the weather at the point. I don't know what it's like where you are. You're in Illinois, is that right?
Yes, I'm in central Illinois. It's not bad. It's been close to 65 or 70 the last few days, which is amazing because last week it was 30. So we're enjoying it.
I don't think we had one 30-degree day in Texas this winter, which was sort of nice. Won't be nice this summer because nothing has died. No, we'll have a lot of mosquitoes. But so you're training. You are also training a thoroughbred for the thoroughbred makeover in October. Is this your first one, or did you do it last year as well?
I did it last year as well with a gray roan named River Clam, who we call Hummingbird's River, and we did the eventing and the jumping portion.
Awesome. And did you do pretty well for that? Was it a lot of fun?
It was loads of fun. You know, he did pretty well. He finished maybe halfway through the pack. He's a late bloomer. He's all legs and no brain. But this year, he's starting to get a brain. So
I got some
good
people like that.
That's me, actually. So you've got a horse this year, and you were saying that you is his name Six? Is that correct, or is it something that means Six?
His registered name is Jogun, and we call him Six. And there's kind of a backstory behind that. Aside from it being a reference to a six shooter, like a gun, I'm a big fan of the movie Divergent, and I was reading the book. And long story short, there's one character in the book named Four because he has four fears. And they have a conversation with another character in the book who has seven fears. But one of her fears is her instructor. So they have this whole conversation about how if she can just eliminate the fear of her teacher, essentially, she'll only have six and they can call her Six. Well, I thought that was really prophetic with this horse. When he came in, he was so fearful of everything. He was fearful of me and everything around him. So I thought, well, if we can at least eliminate the fear of me, the instructor, we can call him Six.
Oh, very cool. I like the literary reference. I'm all about that. So you say he's got some challenges. What you're finding with him, is that typical for off-the-track thoroughbreds? Because I know you do have some experience, or is he doing stuff that you find that's a little bit different than what you've had before?
You know, it just depends on the horse. I find they kind of fall into two categories. Off-track thoroughbreds have seen a lot of stuff. So they've seen crowds, and they've seen motorcycles and scooters and kids on bikes. And I used to work at the backside of the track back in the day, and there were even goats back there and chickens. So they've seen a lot of stuff. So you do have some that come off the track and nothing fazes them. But then you also have the other side of the coin where maybe they were a little bit rough handled. Maybe they were fearful of the farrier. Maybe they had a bad experience in the starting gate. And so they do tend to, you know, have these fears, and you don't really know until you know, if that makes sense. You know, you'll move your arm a certain way and they'll spook at it. And it's like, okay, well, there's a trigger. Let's work through this together. So he kind of falls into that category of the, I'm afraid of everything. It took me about 6-7 weeks to actually mount him because he was so fearful. And, you know, we kind of work through that together.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've been on those, they've got the makeover group on Facebook, and a lot of people are posting, and on one hand, there are folks who, might be like myself, who are a little bit less experienced, and I think there's a bit of a narrative going on about thoroughbreds, like, oh, you know, he's off the track. Yeah, he was probably abused, or, you know, he was neglected and you saved him. And then there's folks who have worked on the backside, or who, you know, who have a lot of experience with the off the track thoroughbreds, who are saying, you know, no, you know, don't have any preconceived misconceptions about these horses, and they are well cared for, and they are trained to do a lot of things. And I know with my guy, I've kind of experienced that as well. You know, when I went to look at him, I was really pleasantly surprised at, oh wow, he does have some good training, and he's very well cared for, and he's, you know, the trainer's really interested in seeing what kind of home he goes to. But, you know, you do have those horses that have had some experiences over the years that you have to work through. So this horse, you're riding him now and everything's going okay?
It is, you know, to kind of work through some of those fear issues. We actually get a lot of, and it's any breed, we get a lot of fearful horses in at my farm at Hummingbird Stables in Rochester, Illinois. And I have a lot of students. We're a busy riding academy. And so all of my students, we do what's called forced hug training.
It's that
essentially
already.
Any person that walks by this horse that's fearful, you need to pet him. Give him a treat. If you're giving your own horse a treat, give him a treat. Give him a pet. I'll stand in his stall and hug him and tell him, let me love you. And we touch him all over his body. And my neighbors probably think I'm crazy. Whenever I walk the horses from their stalls to the pasture, if they're a fearful horse, I'll sing and I'll dance and I'll flail my arms. And after a while, doing this every single day, like a crazy person, they start to realize, you know what, you flailing your arms is not going to hurt me. It may look silly, but it's not going to hurt me.
What when you've trained all different kinds of, you've been doing this for a lot of years, and in the hunter jumper world and adventures and all of that. Matter of fact, I also saw as a side note that you also trained under George Morris, and we have this thing going on the show with his book coming out. Anybody that has trained with George Morris has to tell us their favorite George Morris story. So you're on deck right now. What's your favorite George Morris story?
Okay. You know, I rode with him with an off-track thoroughbred that I purchased years ago for $1,000. He looks like a mule. You know, he's just the typical bay thoroughbred. And I rode with George Morris a couple of years ago. And it was interesting because he makes the comments a lot about, you know, other breeds and how spooky they are. And he really is a big fan of thoroughbreds. So when we were going through the clinic, there were horses that had trouble with certain exercises because the clinic was held in a big outdoor jump field. And we had, you know, some ditches and natural obstacles and hills to work through. And so by the end of the clinic, he actually started saying, well, you know, send the thoroughbred through first. He's a good horse. I know he's going to jump it. He's not going to refuse it like those spooky half-breeds. So I thought that was really cool that he, you know, he was a big fan of working your horse outside, getting them all these experiences, letting them see everything. And he understands that thoroughbreds have seen a lot in their lifetime. So, you know, they're going to go through the exercise and not refuse it.
Did you ever get kicked out of the ring?
Did I? What, with George Morris?
Yeah, with George.
No, and in fact, my horse was one of the very few horses that he or his assistant did not get on at any point during the clinic.
Wow, that's saying a lot, actually.
<That's, Yeah.
laughs> You did well. You didn't get kicked out. He didn't yell at you. You did really well.
No, and I even wore, I had my horse in a colorful saddle pad, and he didn't say one word to me about it.
Wow. You know, I don't know
so
much.
He must have looked past
it. Did you have a ponytail? You couldn't have had a ponytail. You would have gotten kicked out.
No, I have short hair, so.
Okay, good.
I was good there.
You know,
and what hair I do have was tucked up into my helmet in a hairnet. I know better than that.
The listeners are waiting now for a Georgism, so here we go.
You're very beautiful. I hope you have a brain.
There he goes. That George doll has gotten me more play on this radio show than anything else. I love the George doll.
You know, I think my favorite Georgism, which was in the clinic that I rode in, this one poor girl that he kept picking on, he kept saying, you're so pretty with your pretty little horse and your pretty little saddle pad and your pretty little outfit, but at some point you need to learn how to ride.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
Ouch. I'm glad it wasn't me.
She jumped off a bridge later in the day.
Yeah.
Oh, poor thing.
I would be the one. I don't know much about George, but I've read plenty of Georgisms, which are really funny. I would be the one he would tell him to put down the fork.
Oh, sure. I have that one. Hold on.
Best exercise you can do for riding and your horse is push away from the table. Down your fork.
There you go.
That would be mine.
Wow.
And I don't own a hairnet, so I don't think I'd be, even be allowed to ride.
Oh, no. He would kick you out right away.
Yeah. No hair. I don't want to see any hair. Tuck in your shirt. That's the other one that would get kicked out immediately.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I had to do that because I saw you studied with George on your bio.
I did. And it was a great time, and I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, we're actually, we've been supporting the makeover here for years on the Horse Radio Network since he started until it was 10 horses on his farm at Stewart's Farm originally in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
That's how long ago we've been supporting him and trying to get this going. So I think this year, for the first time, we're actually going to come out in the fall and watch it. But what was your takeaway from last year as a competition? You know, you've been to a lot. So what was your takeaway? What was different about this one? What did you like about it? Obviously, you liked it. You're doing it again. But what was special about it?
You know, I really liked that it showed the versatility of the breed. You know, a lot of people see a thoroughbred outside of racing and think, okay, well, they can only do hunter jumper or only do eventing. But I loved that they had all sorts of avenues. I mean, they had barrels and freestyle and competitive trail and you name it. I thought it really kind of showed how they could work cattle, and they're so versatile. I mean, they're athletic, and they really do aim to please as a breed. So that was my biggest takeaway from the competition, is just the versatility of the breed.
Yeah, that's always something really interesting, is to see what they can do even outside the English side of things. And I've been to a few Buck Brannaman clinics, and he's ridden a giant, gorgeous thoroughbred and worked cattle on that thing better than most quarter horses I've seen. And someone actually told me, I don't know if this is true, but we were talking, I don't know how thoroughbreds came up in the conversation, but we were talking about them and their influence on quarter horses. And he said, you know, that's why they went to the thoroughbred, was to put the cow in the quarter horse. I was like, really? The thoroughbred of all things? And my guy has shown me that already, because he's playing with my goat and my little mini mule, and he's already tracking them and looking at their every move. And because I'm looking at the working ranch, and I'm like, oh yeah, you're going to be good at this. And speaking of which, have you made any decisions on what kind of events you're going to do this year yet?
You know, I'm kind of leaning towards the hunter side of things. Every year we get in a handful of thoroughbreds. I've been doing this for a long time. I used to break racehorses to go to the track and then help them find new careers after the track. And, you know, my biggest thing, even though personally I'm an eventer, I'm a jumper, I always try to listen to my horse when they come in and see, what are they going to excel at? What do they enjoy doing? You know, it's just like people, just because I love maybe math doesn't mean my daughter wants to be a mathematician. So listening to the horse and seeing where they're going to excel. Joe Gunn, who we call Six, is not built for speed. Now that he's over his fears, he is the most lackadaisical, quiet, lazy horse on the farm at this point. So I think more of the hunter side, maybe field hunter, possibly freestyle, since we've done some, you know, mounted archery and even skajoring this winter. But we'll see. There's plenty of time to decide.
Oh, you got to tell us about skajoring.
Yes. We haven't had that yet on the show, on my show.
You know, it started out, I hate winter so much, and I don't know why. I live in Illinois, but I do. And so I was bored one day. It's, you know, 15 below, there's snow everywhere. And I'm trying to think of something to do that would be fun with the horses that would just get me out, because I miss riding in the field. You know, the arena gets kind of boring after a while. So I found it on the internet, and it looked like so much fun. And I figured it would be a great way to kind of get Six over some of his fears. So I started with ground driving, because I work alone a lot. So it's not like I could pull a skier or a sledder behind me. I started with ground driving and teaching him to steer and whoa, which the whoa was, you know, a challenge to get. And then the snow melted, because it's Illinois, so it goes from 15 below to 35, you know, the next day. So my son actually let me borrow his longboard, his skateboard. So I was skijoring down the driveway with a skateboard, which he took just fine. And then when we got the next snow, I would steer him around the jump field and hop on my snowboard, and he would pull me, and it was a blast. And it was great because it kind of got him over some more fears and built up that trust. And it was something fun to do in the winter when we had snow.
If you're looking for a freestyle idea, in case you do the freestyle, I don't know if you've seen Bobby Kerr, who does the Mustang makeovers. And you talking about the skijoring or skijoring, I cannot pronounce that right. But I remember the first year I showed up and he was there, and I had never heard of him. He wasn't on the scene yet. And I was looking at him practice. We had a round where you had like 90 seconds after the trail class to show whatever you wanted. People were laying their horses down and some people were doing trick roping, and Bobby did something, and I saw it in the warm-up pin first that I'd never seen before at that time. And he had a rain slicker on his saddle tied with the strings. And I saw him do this in the warm-up pen. He took down the slicker, and it was tied to the saddle. And he stood on it and drove his horse, and the horse drove him on the slicker. And I remember, because I was competing that year, and I saw that, and I said, oh, well, I'm screwed. Because that was the coolest thing I had ever seen. I thought, and some people have tried versions of it since, but the way he did that was just, it was so inventive. So you should definitely do a play on that if you decide to do the freestyle. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I was wondering even if they would, I haven't asked or, gotten that far, but if they would allow video of him skijoring from this winter, because I highly doubt in October in Lexington we're going to have enough snow to actually demonstrate that.
But you could demonstrate that, because the sand will act as snow. So
I think there's going to be too much drag, and I wouldn't use a snowboard.
I would use a sled of some kind.
Well, and there's a skateboard. Okay. It's a skateboard-like thing that has these big, thick, off-roading type tires that people use specifically for sand. I'll have to see where you can find it, but I've seen it before. That would totally work.
Here we are, planning your freestyle for you.
I know.
I'll have to have them sponsor me. Yeah. Or I could try water skis, because they have the cross-country course right there. We could try water skiing.
That's true. Just have them fill the whole arena with water.
The cross-country course killed me 2 years ago, by the way.
What was that?
That was the cross-country course that nearly killed me 2 years ago.
Oh, that's right.
I nearly drowned.
Oh, no.
She decided to try doing a water crossing in one of the things and didn't know how deep it was. It was
in fact, not a water crossing at all. And it went up to my horse's neck.
Oh,
it was
not good.
But it was not intended for crossing. That's a traumatic Kentucky experience.
Well, now, I got to ask you, too, we've had a couple times recently we've talked about mounted archery is becoming so popular now. So you've tried it?
I have. Again, I get bored in the winter. So it seemed like something fun that I could do with him in the indoor arena. I actually, this is the inner nerd in me. I went online and I bought these LARP arrows, live action role play arrows.
You and I are on the same page already. I just have to say that.
Okay. So I got the ones with the foam tips because I'm like, well, I'm a horrible archer and I'm a horrible shot. And the last thing I need to do is accidentally shoot Joe Gunn in the neck with an actual arrow while I'm practicing.
Or your foot.
So
Yeah,
exactly. So I got these foam tipped arrows. And I started practicing, I started on the ground, just throwing the arrow next to him. And then I started shooting the arrows next to him. And then I would do it from a standstill on his back. And then, you kind of work your way up. It's loads of fun. I'm still a terrible shot, but it's fun to do.
There's somebody that moved in recently near us that bought a whole new property, built it from scratch, and actually we were going, what are they making through? They had some woods area that they had cleared out, and the house is beautiful and everything, but they were making this kind of path through the woods, and we were going, they're sculpting it and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden we see all the archery targets go up, and that's what they are. They're mounted archers, and they built this most beautiful course that you could do with mounted archery. It obviously is becoming a thing. People are buying farms to specifically put their mounted archery course on it. So,
and I am so excited about that. In fact, there's a guy doing an archery thing in Texas the weekend of Road to the Horse. So I'm so bummed.
Are you going to miss it?
Yes, obviously. But to me, archery is the one way that I could secretly live out my dreams.
You know
dreams
what concerns
being,
me about this a little bit, guys, is I'm a horse husband, and I've seen a lot of horse wives that are really klutzy off the horse. So I'm just concerned about them having pointy arrows. That's the only thing I'm saying, is just concerned. Just saying.
Yeah, that would be my problem.
With the mounted archery, it's a little bit difficult in Illinois because really, it's everyone in the Southwest that does it and has those beautiful courses that you're talking about. So for me, I actually got into mounted archery a little bit with a Frisian that I was training. And I was trying to figure out, okay, where's the best avenue for her to end up? Well, as it turned out, mounted archery, she excelled. I was able to drop the reins, canter around the arena in whatever pattern I wanted to, steering with my legs and shooting at targets. Because I don't have enough property here to mark out a full course with rope and gallop it. So I figured, how can I do it in the arena? So that's what we're working on with Six, too.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, people can find you where? What's your website?
Hummingbirdstables.com, or they can find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/hummingbirdstables. Six.
And you do lessons and things there. People can actually come to you for lessons and stuff. Are you only training horses?
I do lessons. I train horses. We get a lot of off-track thoroughbreds, but we've had everything from, 10-hand ponies because I'm petite, all the way up to an 18-hand Shire is very likely going to come in for training soon.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, you and Mary need to get together before this happens. Sounds like you two have a lot in common. You need to do a weekend together.
We need
together.
To do some archery.
Yeah, there you go.
and Tammy is actually really interested in it as well.
Really?
And she would probably kick all our butts. Yeah.
Tammy Surratt. Yeah, she's the world champion mounted shooter. So, like 150 times over. So, yeah, figures she dominates that sport. Now she wants to come dominate archery.
All I care about is pretending that I'm in Lord of the Rings. That's it.
See, at this point, my enthusiasm outweighs my skills, but I'm getting there.
All right. Thank you, Amy. We appreciate you stopping by. And good luck with this horse.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're going to take a break it sounds like you two really should get together, by the way. You have a lot in common.
I know.
So are you going to wear one of the robes from Lord of the Rings? Did you already buy your robe?
Oh, man. I am such a closeted nerd and geek on that kind of thing. And I've always wanted things like, a sword and to learn archery. And so that when I saw mounted archery was starting to pick up some traction, I'm like, yes, I can look like I'm being serious about something, but really I'm just role playing.
There you go. You need your robe. You need to outfit yourself. You need to look the part, Mary.
Exactly.
Again, no cowboy hat. Everything you're picking doesn't have a cowboy hat. You realize that, right?
I know. Yeah. I need to work the cowboy angle.
There you go. Well, we're going to take a break for our song of the day. And I thought, we'll do a little bit of Dan Roberts, one of your compatriots down there in Texas. And this song is Viva La Cowboy. And then we're coming back with Warwick Schiller. You're getting the big names on today. Warwick Schiller's going to be with us and going to talk a little bit more about training. And I guess you're going to be talking about nervous horses. So
yes.
All of that's coming up on today's show. Of course, you can find Mary at marykitzmiller.com.
All right, all you cowboys and cowgirls, I really need your help singing the chorus on this one. It's called Viva La Cowboy. I hear a lot of talk about him dying.
They're calling him a vanishing breed. They sing them sad songs about how he's come and gone, as if he's faded into history. Well, I can tell you something for certain. Yeah, one thing that I know for a fact. They ain't exactly dropping the curtain on a way of life that's way intact. So viva the cowboy, long live his kind. Here's to the ranchers and the wranglers and the rodeo hands and all the generations standing in line. They can roll with the punches. Hey, they can weather the change. So viva the cowboy. He's still got a home on the range. Westerns and pickup trucks are still hauling hay. They keep on raising the bar in the PBR, and there's thousands in the PRCA. You won't find them on the endangered species. They ain't protected anywhere that I know. And they're still making them as tough and as bronky as it did when the buffalo roamed. Hey, viva the cowboy. Long live his kind. Here's to the ranchers and the wranglers and the rodeo hands and all the generations standing in line. They can roll with the punches and they can weather the change. So viva the cowboy. He's still got a home on the range.
God, help me out here now.
Viva the cowboy. Long live his kind.
Yeah.
Here's to the ranchers and the wranglers and the rodeo hands and all the generations standing in line. They can roll with the punches. Hey, they can weather the change. So viva the cowboy. He's still got a home on the range. Yeah, viva the cowboy. He'll always have a home on.
Well, that was Dan Roberts. Oldbootsmusic.com is where you can find all of his music. And of course, this is Horses in the Morning. It's a Mary Kitzmiller episode that we do the second Thursday of every month. Now, it's not the only time you're going to be hearing Mary. As we said, you'll be hearing her three times next week as we do 8 hours of live coverage from Road to the Horse. Well, your next guest is ready, Mary.
Wonderful. Okay, so we have calling in from California, Warwick Schiller. How are you today?
Good morning, Mary. Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. It's pretty early over there, I imagine, so hope we didn't get you up too early for this.
No, not at all.
So I was reading over your bio, and you were pretty heavily into reining horses and then decided to start working on clinics and teaching people. Was there anything specific that made you decide to switch over to the clinician side of things?
I had so many people for a long time tell me that I explained things in a way that, even though they'd heard it all before, they understood it better when I said it. So, you know, I wanted to be a really good reiner, and I turned out I wasn't one of those. I wanted to be.
I feel
so,
you. I've been there.
You kind of got to go with your strengths, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm kind of in the same boat. I did the reining thing for a while. Would love to get back into it, but man, it's hard. But you know, there's still a lot. The reining is such a wonderful sport because the things that you need a horse to do to be a good reiner tend to be oftentimes things that all horses could use. So I think folks that have done the reining side of things can offer a really good perspective, no matter what kind of discipline you're riding in, on getting a horse nice and broke. And that's actually what we were going to talk about today. You know, I know a lot of folks, probably some of these people who are doing the off-the-track thoroughbreds for the makeover and have had experience with anxious horses. And that can be one of the most challenging things to deal with. So we were going to talk about anxious horses today, and if you had any tips on how people can deal with that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of head-on ways you can deal with anxiety. You know, you're balancing, you're sensitizing and desensitizing. That sort of thing is very important with handling anxiety. But there's something that I do and a lot of people do, and part of it comes from the reining stuff, that it's when you allow those horses to have options, you know, when you allow them to try things and either works out for them, it doesn't work out for them, it seems to help with the anxiety, because the anxiety, you know, horses experience anxiety when they feel like they have no control over what happens to them. And you know, that's one of the things that all these clinics around the world that do, people are amazed at some of the principles behind it. And really, they came from the reining. I mean, as you'd know, with those reining horses, you don't really make them do anything. You allow them to explore their options, and some things are harder than other things, and they get to choose really what they do. You know what I mean?
For sure. And I thought it was kind of funny, you know, a few years ago when they had the World Equestrian Games in Kentucky, they were interviewing one of the guys who was doing the jumpers, and I can't remember who it was. And he even remarked at, oh my gosh, these young reining horses walk in here in front of this crowd of thousands of people, and they just kind of look around like it's another day on the job. And I know that's what made the reiners at the event really stand out for folks that weren't used to seeing the reining horses go. And I think people have a misconception about them, thinking because the maneuvers are at such high speed that the horse has to be really amped up and they have to really want to go. And that's the exact opposite, you know, especially with an event where, you know, the hallmark maneuvers, the big sliding stops, you want a horse that is begging to stop. They're wanting to hear that word. They want to hear the word whoa. They're waiting for it. And you want a horse that you kind of would rather have to push on a little bit than one that's taking you for a ride. And I'm sure you've probably been in the show ring when that happens. And it's a little scary when a horse has got a lot of go and no signs of wanting to slow down. So a lot of the things
that's when we say the horse showed me instead of showing him.
Yes, that's happened to me more times than I'd like to admit. But so there's a lot of things that go into getting a horse that is hunting the stop and is looking for that moment where they get to stop and relax. And again, I think that just provides a really interesting perspective. And I have to say, the biggest questions I always get are folks who say, my horse likes to pace on the trail, he calls out to other horses, he's barn sour, he's buddy sour, he doesn't stand still while being tied. And all of those relate to that anxiety. And so if someone's got a horse like that, maybe they're nervous at shows, or, you know, they're bad on the trail. Do you have any kind of starting point that you start out with, or do you tackle the problem specifically?
You know, I really don't tackle problems specifically at all, because most problems don't occur where they're, you know, they get dangerous where they are, but there's things that happen way before that. And I do a little thing I call the 50-foot trial ride. I'm talking about trial riding, is I ask my horse to leave the barn without steering him, and he's probably going to go about 10 feet and turn around and go straight back to the barn. And when he does, I'll probably trot small circles there or whatever until he wants to leave again, and then he might go 15 feet and go back. But before I ever go on a trial or teach a horse to trial ride, I want to make sure that he's quite happy going away from the barn. Actually, he'd rather go away from the barn, because the barn is a lot of work, because we tend to teach these horses that the barn is the holy grail. When we get back to the barn, everything's going to go away. The saddle's going to come off, I'm going to hose you off, and I'm going to give you some food or whatever I'm going to do. And so I really, you know, in my program, I tend to fix problems before they happen. I'm not really good at dealing with problems while they're happening. I think you've got to be talented to do that, and that's not me.
Yeah, that is the thing that I struggled with when I first started teaching people, is I would get these questions if my horse doesn't want to leave the barn, or they're, you know, they're anxious when they leave their friends, or they pace on the trail, and what have you. And I used to think I had to come up with specific exercises for that problem. And I couldn't think of any, because when I really thought about it, I was like, well, my horses just don't do that. And I know I'm not that much of a genius that all my horses are perfect, but I had to really think, why don't I deal with this problem every day? Because even the training horses, after 3 or 4 days, even the training horses that I would get in for a short period weren't doing these things. And I thought, okay, what's the common denominator? And the biggest thing for me, and I'm sure you'll agree, is just simply controlling their feet. And it sounds like a stock answer, and you know, a lot of people kind of throw that out there, but it really is. You know, if I can move your feet anywhere I want 100% of the time, then, you know, then there will be, you know, those problems aren't even going to show up.
Right. And for me, it's more about the first thing I really do with horses is say, where would you like to move your feet to? So I give them the option. Where do you want to move your feet to? If they want to move their feet somewhere I don't want them, they have to move their feet a lot more when they get there than if they choose the option I want. And I really feel that, speaking of anxiety, I feel that is the, for me, the most important part of fixing anxiety. I don't really fix it, but I give those horses options over what they do. And they're never really doing something they don't want to do by the time we get to it. You know, and it's the same, I'd say, with the reining horses, is a lot of people go, how do you make a horse do that stuff? And you say, well, you can't make a horse do that stuff. You have to teach them to want to.
Yeah, that, you know, I don't think that's stressed enough with the horses. I really like what you're saying about giving them the option, because that is really scary. And of course, you know, you and I have talked a little bit about clicker training. And one of the things on clicker training is, or the people who are really focused on the positive reinforcement aspect of it, is you do take away a lot of consequence and you do allow your horse a choice. And that is really scary to say, okay, what do you want to do? Because sometimes what they want to do is definitely not what I want to do. And so our knee-jerk reaction is to kind of choke up on the horse and prevent the bad thing from happening. You know, don't allow them to do that, because then things will get bad. And of course, that just creates that vicious circle of now you're holding on to them really tight and you're not giving them any options. So they're going to get more anxious. And then that's where it's going to erupt in all those things that they can do to hurt us, the bolting and the rearing and the bucking and all of that. And I think you're right on letting them have that option and kind of exploring what their motives are and why they want to do what they want to do. It definitely gives you a better place to start.
Yeah, and as long as it's safe, as long as you start in the right place. I mean, don't go on a 10-mile trail ride and when you point them towards home, say, now what do you want to do?
Don't want to
trail ride, and then point them home and say, now what do you want to do? You know, I know a horse is going to bolt 10 feet or 50 feet, but they may bolt 10 miles, you know. So I would like, I'm really big on what I call the horse knowing the answer before you ask the question, or another way you could put it would be solving the problem before it actually arises. And I think that's, in at least in my process, and I think a lot of trainers' processes, like you mentioned, you said the horses you have didn't do those bad things. What is it you do that changes that? And I think you start at the beginning and you solve the problems before they ever really happen.
Well, and it's really easy to look at what we think the problem is. And when someone approaches you and they say, my problem is the horse does X, you know, they pull back on the tie ring, or they, you know, they bolt with me down the trail. And what they've just described is a symptom. You know, the horse did this because they're anxious or confused or scared or nervous, or maybe they have a history. And so, you know, you're not going to fix it by anything you try to do on the trail. Like you said, I wouldn't try this at the Grand Canyon, for instance. You know, start someplace where everything's going to be safe.
Right.
And anything you try to do to fix it there, whether you put different equipment on them or you're trying to tackle it, you know, in the middle of a long trail ride, at best, you're just going to stick a Band-Aid on it. But the problem is still there.
Yeah, and I really think, and most people, you know, they're recreational riders and they just want to get on and go for a ride. And I think a lot of people I meet start out that way. I know I started out that way. I wanted to learn to do the reining and how in learning to do the reining, I learned this all this other stuff, and it becomes, I don't know, it becomes a bit of a lifestyle, you know, it becomes a bit of a thought process about everything. It really becomes more than just about horses, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think a lot of people that have chosen to do this professionally kind of get that taste where you start out, maybe you want to ride and then maybe you want to show, and then all these things come up that you don't know how to deal with. So you want to figure them out. And initially you're learning just so you can be better at the show or so you can have a better ride on the trail. And then some people that becomes an obsession and you start thinking, well, wait, how does my horse think? And why is he motivated to do that? And what are some things I can do to help out? And I think a lot of the professionals you see these days, that's kind of what happened. It turned from just a weekend hobby into this obsession on figuring out not only why their horses do the things they do, but how can I change my horse's behavior so he wants to work with me? And how can I do that in the most, resistance-free and subtle way that I can? Like I always say, I'll be studying this the rest of my life, and I'm never going to learn everything there is to know by a long shot.
Right. But, I mean, when you just said a minute ago, people are trying to figure, how do I change my horse? And the big life lesson part of it is, for the most part, people have to change themselves first. And I think that's where they have the big epiphany. I've had so many people after clinic send me an email or a message or something on Facebook and saying, you know what, since the clinic, I get along so much better with my children or my husband or my coworkers or whatever, because the lessons they learn are pretty universal. They're not just horse lessons.
Oh, for sure. And you know, that kind of reminded me of a point. A few have come by and said, of course, there's the famous, I guess it would be attributed to Ray Hunt, in the make the right thing easy and the wrong thing hard. And there's a few folks that will have methods to where, okay, if your horse wants to go back to the barn, you're going to give him a job to do. And I think I've seen some folks that have gotten it a little bit mixed up. And I want to stress, if you do employ that, and I'm going to give you something to do, when you do want to run back to the barn or you do want to pace on the trail, I've seen folks kind of take it the other way and think that what they're doing to the horse, they're going to punish the horse, or show you. You didn't stand still when I tried to put the bridle on, so I'm going to take you to the round pen and run you around until you're dripping with sweat.
Right.
And of course, that's not how it is. And I think in order to change your approach, so that's someone who's trying the method that they think you were telling them, but really the problem is that they're not looking at themselves. What am I doing that's creating this anxiety? And what do I need to change? You know, how can I be softer? How can I make the horse want to do what I want to do? And unfortunately, that's something that's a bit trickier than simply following the directions you think you're given.
Right. I know of someone in another country that she employed that. Because I do that a lot, especially in the arena with the gate or with the side of the arena the other horses are on. You know, I let them go over there and work them there. But I know someone who, she said, I got it wrong initially. What I would do is when they would go to the gate, I would, you know, cut them in small circles and tap them with the whip a lot or whatever. And the horses would run away from the whip. And as soon as they ran away from the whip, then they'd run back to the gate because the gate was the place of safety. You know, They put too much pressure on them. And really, I mean, you'd know this, but when you're making the wrong thing hard and the right thing easy, the right thing has to be zero pressure and the wrong thing has to be slightly more pressure. And you're going to start out with the littlest amount of pressure in the wrong place and zero pressure in the right place initially, because that might work.
Right. And I don't want to think of it so much of, oh, you ran to the gate, I'm going to show you, which I think folks will tend to interpret it that way. And it's not, me against you and I'm going to win, because the horse is going to win that every time, I guarantee.
Exactly.
And when you do give them something to do, it's not necessarily, you know, what I've discovered, it took me a long time to figure this out, is I was the same way. You run to the gate. Okay, we're going to trot small circles. We're going to do lots of rollbacks into the fence and I'm going to make you hustle and da, 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 da. And it never worked. And then what I figured out is and it doesn't seem like it's much different, but there really is a difference. You know, okay, if you want to go to the gate, you know what? I really wanted to work on our turnarounds today, and let's just work on them over by the gate here. And when I do it, I'm not using the turnaround as a punishment because, you know, for if you're training reining horses especially, you don't want them to hate the turnaround. I'm just saying, why don't we work on this over here? If you want to be over here, cool, that's fine. Why don't we work on the turnaround? And, you know, we'll work on that for 5, 10, 20 minutes, and, you know, you're going to need a break after that. Why don't we go back over to this corner over here and take a nice break? And pretty soon, the horse is going to start craving another part of the arena because, you know, they're not stupid. They know no matter how hard you work them in the arena, they're still going out that gate. Unless you can make an arena full of gates, you're not going to change that form. So it's not simply about, I'm going to punish you for being here, because that'll make them want to bust out the gate even more.
Exactly. You know, and the Ray Hunt saying I love to use for that is first you go with them, then they go with you, and then you go together. And so as far as the gate, they want to go to the gate. First you go with them, and when they get there, you go, hey, you love the gate. I love the gate too. Let's do whatever it is here. But it's really in your like you said, it's in your mindset. If you get to the gate and you think, you rotten son of a gun, you came to the gate, I'm going to do this to you, it comes across completely differently than if you go, hey, you like the gate, I like the gate too, and I want to work on turnarounds or whatever it is. And I think your mindset really comes out in your hands and your legs. You know, if you're mad at them because they're over there, your hands and your legs will be mad at them. Whereas if you're like, hey, you know, pretty chill about the whole thing, the gate's a cool place to be, but while we're here, we may as well do this stuff. I think it really comes across differently to the horse.
It really does. And you know, that's what I'm hoping people will get, especially, you know, from this conversation or as they go forward, is it's not just that you followed the directions that you found on the DVD or that you listened to at the clinic. It's really your intent. Your intent has everything to do with it. And you know, you don't want to think in terms of punishment and not punishment. You want to think in terms of, okay, what can I do to get you to crave this other part of the arena? And I had read an article by a really well-known horseman, cannot remember who it was, but he was talking about how he gets young colts to pick up the correct lead for the first time. And he uses the barn. He rides out in the open. He doesn't have an arena. And he says, you know, I know when I go around this tree here, they're going to want to take me back to the barn. And because of that, their body is going to be set up in such a way that I could just gently push you into that right lead. So he will only ask for that lead right there because he knows, like you said, he's not going to ask for something he doesn't know the answer to. So he knows he'll get that correct lead there 100% of the time. And when I first read that, I thought, but you're letting him get away with wanting to go to the barn. You should do something else instead. And he said, and it lines up with that Ray Hunt saying is, you know, first he does it where he knows the horse will want to pick up the lead. And if you do that enough and you get the right answer 100% of the time, then you can ask for it anywhere you want. So instead of thinking, my horse wants to run to the barn, oh my gosh, this is so bad, think, okay, well, I know he's going to want to kind of angle toward the barn right here. So what opportunity has arisen that I can use to help him understand what I'm trying to teach him?
Right. You know, if people want another example of that one, I use it in the round pen a lot when I first start hooking on with a horse in the round pen. If they're attracted a little bit to the gate of the round pen, when I want them to turn in for the first time, I ask them on the side of the round pen opposite the gate. There's no use trying to ask them to turn in on the gate side because they're kind of clinging to that gate. So I'll do it on the other side. They're half thinking about coming towards the gate then anyway. So even, you know, even when they're doing things that we don't like, you can use them to help us train horses, as you know.
Yeah, and you know, that is one of those things that it's definitely easier said than done. It's really hard to erase your feelings about it, especially if, oh, I clearly didn't want you to go there. And it's hard to kind of put aside of what I do and don't want you to do. And instead, you know, put your thinking cap on and think, okay, how can I use this opportunity? You know,
that's the life lesson right there. That carries over to everything else too.
That is true.
Well, you know, Warwick, it's funny you mentioned that because you were talking earlier about how these lessons with the horses go over into your other life, your non-horse life. And, you know, that's something that Monty Roberts has been saying forever. But there was just a German study. I don't know if you saw it. The German Equestrian Federation did a study of 411 horse riders and then 400 non-horse riders, and it was a long study, but what they found is that riders were generally more determined, enthusiastic, structured, and balanced than their non-riding counterparts. So, you know, we always knew that as horse people, that horse people teach you to be better people. But now there's that actual study that shows that that is true.
Yeah, it's interesting. I usually tell people that, you know, this horse training, whether you want to just trial ride, horse riding becomes a discipline. It's a bit like karate. No one gets into karate because they want to beat people up. It's a discipline. You have to control your mind. You know, you have to be able to control your mind to do it well. And I think the people on the journey with these horses, not people who just want to kick and whip and go for a ride, but actually want to figure the horses out, it becomes a life journey, and it's really no different than being a black belt in karate or any other thing like that.
Well, Warwick, you can be found at warwickschiller.com. What's your next, what's coming up next schedule-wise?
I fly to Texas on Friday to a clinic in Texas, and then I fly on Monday to Missouri, do a clinic in Missouri. Then I come home, and it's spring break, so I'm going to go for a couple of days to Hawaii with my wife and son, have the first non-horse vacation I've had in I don't know how long.
Really? Wow. What are you going to do? You'll break out in hives when you're there.
Well, my son's a surfer, so he's going to try to teach me how to surf, so it'll be interesting.
Oh, you might break other things while you're there, then.
or lose a limb, you know.
Well, have a blast in Hawaii. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
All right, warwickschiller.com. Thanks. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Warwick.
That's something I do not think I could do, is surf. I would definitely break something. My nose, more than likely.
How would you break your nose, though?
Because the surfboard comes up and whacks you in the face.
Yeah, but it's like light foam. I mean, my biggest fear would be, you know, losing limbs to sharks, because that does, in fact, happen.
On every day.
Oh,
that's
my
sort
gosh.
Of like saying you're going to get bit by an alligator.
See, I'm one of those people who I'm in the swimming pool.
You watch
pool.
Way too many movies is what the problem is.
I watch a little bit too many of those. Well, oh, speaking of movies, I have the inside scoop for you guys.
Okay.
Sharknado 4 is in production. So,
are you the only one that liked the first three?
I didn't watch them, but I did follow their progress.
You didn't see? I didn't see them either. I did not see any of the Sharknado.
It's one of those things, it sounds so terrible that it's also awesome.
Which is why I think they did so well. It was sort of like, you probably saw these, you're a movie buff, back in the, was it 1980s when the airplane movies were out?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of like those. They were so bad, they were funny. I mean,
well, but that was a clear parody. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
And if you want to get really obscure, the guys who made Airplane made this movie called Kentucky Fried Movie. And it's terrible, it's raunchy, but it is hilarious.
It's too bad we're not going to have time for movies next week, but we're in Kentucky.
I know. I will make time. I'm the person who went and saw the Ninja Turtles movie by myself in an empty theater.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only one that went to the theater to see that movie.
And you know, I go and I'm like, I can go see this by myself because I'm a big Turtles fan and not a Michael Bay fan, but a big Turtles fan. And I go there. I'm like, oh, no one's here. That's cool. Whole theater to myself. And then the movie ends and I walk out and I realize they were trying to close the theater and they had to wait for me to watch the Turtle movie by myself because it was the last movie playing. So all this staff had to sit there while I watched the Turtle movie by myself before they could close. They probably thought, oh, we're going to get off early. And then I walk in there to see the Turtle movie.
So now you're a big movie buff, and we talk about movies a lot on the show here. And Jamie's favorite horsey movie of all time is Man from Snowy River. What's yours?
Oh, that's a good one. You know, it changes. It changes. I like the Black Stallion movies. I do have to say, no matter how corny and inaccurate a horse movie is, I will cry at all of them. And Jen just texted Seabiscuit.
Oh, yeah, that was one of my favorites, I think. I think it's probably my favorite one.
It was pretty good. The only thing I was a bit persnickety watching the movie because of, you know, some of the historical inaccuracies, and I thought, you know, oh, this didn't really happen this way. And yet still at the end, I think the horse was winning, some big race. I can't remember what it was, but anytime there's footage of a horse in slow motion, the waterworks come on and I cry like a baby. So,
are you like Jennifer, who absolutely hates fake whinnies in movies?
Yes. Yes.
The horse's mouth isn't even moving and they're whinnying, you know?
I'm like, was that really necessary? And, you know,
apparently it is. It's required when you see a horse in a TV show or a movie, it whinnies.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like the wrong tack, you know, if they're in 13th century England and they're in a Western saddle, I get a little twitchy.
And a very modern, you know, a very modern bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jennifer notices that stuff.
And I'm going to offend a percentage of our audience here. I apologize in advance. Really, does every single horse in a movie have to be a Frisian now?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Apparently it does. It has to be a black, very shiny Frisian.
Well, and if you know every the breed... Yeah, and if you know the breed, you're like, they weren't even around during this time. Or, okay, one more thing I have to throw in there. In Zorro, and it is clearly a Frisian, and Anthony Hopkins' character says that it's a black Andalusian. I'm like, no, it is not a black Andalusian. It's a Frisian. There would not have
likely been a Frisian. And you and five other people knew the difference, but... But
don't
you know
even get
what?
Me start.
If we put period correct horses in, it would be dumpy looking draft crosses.
I'm cool with that.
And that's what it would be.
They
but
could
that's
get them
not
all on Craigslist.
Flashy.
Yeah.
You know, when you watch even Downton Abbey, which just finished the other night, and I finally watched it. So all you Downton Abbey fans who I know you who you are, that have been waiting to talk to me about it, you can text me now and we can chat about that. But even in Downton Abbey, it was always the flashy horses. You know, it was never the plug workhorse. That was out there. And they were always very shiny. I'm not too sure all the horses back then were all that shiny.
Well, they had grooms. They had like stable guys and grooms and
all that
stuff.
Shiny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were not all that
they didn't have show sheen back in the day, I suppose.
They didn't really have show sheen back then. They maybe brushed them and then put the tack on. But that's not good for TV. So.
Yeah.
So I say if I had to pick one, Seabiscuit would be my... That'd still be my favorite, just because of the story and everything.
The story is wonderful. The book that it's based on is amazing. And
how about Unbranded? Did you see that?
I did see that. What
did you think of the four boys? By the way, he was just on the Horsemanship radio show. So if you haven't heard that, what's his name, Jennifer? The head guy on Unbranded.
Ben Masters.
Ben Masters was on the Horsemanship radio show being interviewed by Monty Roberts. So you want to check out that last episode if you want to see that. But what was your thought on that movie?
You know, it was more bittersweet than I was expecting. But, I mean, that's a documentary for you. They're not, they're going to have a little bit of a narrative, but it's not meant to be like a, you know, like
a
feature film type. Yeah. So it was a bit bittersweet. It was really interesting to see, you know, see a different part of the world. And I really love that they use the Mustangs. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Did it make you want to make the ride?
It did.
You know, there's no TV or movies along the way, though. I'm just saying.
My phone will pick up some service. I can download plenty before I go.
Well, you know, Moonshine, he might be up for it.
Yeah. He'd be pretty cool at it.
Can you just do the ride and then send in a video to the competition? Say,
sure.
This is what we did, but I couldn't do it there.
So, we did homework.
Yeah, that's right. We've done our homework. We're there. 3,000 miles. Well, thank you so much, Mary. I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. And we'll remind everybody that Friday, Saturday, Sunday of next week, that is the 18th, 19th, 20th, we'll be coming to you with 8 hours of live coverage from Road to the Horse. We'll also be putting it out as a recorded version immediately after on the Horses in the Morning feed. So this will be the Horses in the Morning feed for the live and Horses in the Morning feed for the recorded version. And we're going to be the only place that you can get live free live coverage. They do have a video feed, and I think that's like $50. So if you want to watch that, you can buy that and then listen to us. You can watch the video and then listen to us. That's what you want to do. That'd be the best way to do it. But we will be coming to you for free live from, and we want to thank our sponsors for that. We have a bunch of sponsors that have signed up, and we'll be going more over that next week, but we appreciate them being part of that coverage. And of course, horselovers.com is our title sponsor of all of the coverage next week. So, Mary, thank you so much. MaryKitzmiller.com is where you can find all her stuff. She has a store there, too. So check it out. Lots of good stuff that they make. Her and her mom make all of this, and you're going to want to, most of it. You're going to want to check it out there at MaryKitzmiller.com. That's it. See you next week, Mary.
All right. See ya.